Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Hello and welcome to Double Play.
Hello and welcome to Double. That's how you intro it.
Yes, I was going to say the show formerly known as Chris Clemmer Presents the Recrotchables, Two Nuts Talking Ball, a sports movie podcast featuring Brandon Walker, who's right next to me.
It was called Chris Clemmer Presents the Recrotchables, Two Nuts Talking Ball, a sports movie podcast featuring Brandon Walker for a little bit, and that is a strong name. It's a good name. I like that. It originally started as, what the hell did we call it at the beginning?
Dodging Wrenches.
Dodging Wrenches, which was a terrible name.
It's your idea.
It was a terrible name. Now, explain to them the mechanism that made us arrive at Double Play.
Well, Nick.
Terraini.
Of course. Nicky Clicky, I mean, everyone loves Nick, said, I have an idea. He brought it to you. You guys called me over. Loved the idea. The idea is we're going to talk about two movies in the same sport. One may be known as great or good. One may be known as not as great.
Let me set it up for people that aren't stupid. The podcast, the concept is Double Play, telling the stories of the best and the worst of sports movies.
Potentially, but that might not always be the case. We might also, like the bad movie more.
Okay, no, but it's absolutely the best and worst of sports movies. These two movies behind us, some would call this one Moneyball the best, and a lot of people might say that one, Ed, is the worst. Or among the good and the bad.
Right. And what we're going to do.
Yin and the yang.
But you forgot to say it's the
peanut
same,
butter and the jelly.
It's the same sport every week. So, like, next week we're going to cover basketball. This week it's baseball. That's an important thing, to say.
Double Play.
Yep.
Celebrating the best.
Celebrating.
And the worst of sports movies.
All right. That's good.
The juxtaposition.
I gotta say,
dichotomy.
So it was your name. You came up with the name Double Play.
So I don't know. I didn't know if I liked the concept. I was mulling the concept.
You seem confused. Like you usually do. You got a goofy look in your face.
I'd like to point out that I'm the only one that ever came up with a name for the show. If I'm the dumb one, if I'm the dumb one here, what does that say? Anyway. So
we're the dumb one.
We went over the concept.
Yep.
I stood up. I started walking away.
Yep.
And it hit me about 10
steps. Ran into a couple desks.
It hit me about 10 steps in. I was like, oh, if we're going to do two movies, Double Play.
Right.
Now, we will have a better studio. This setup looks ass.
Why does this look ass? This looks nice.
Look at the wires all over the floor. Your Coke cans in there. Your Coke bottle.
You're in here every week. Every day you're in here.
Yeah.
To do the Brandon Walker show from this very studio.
It is what it is. But, so that's how we arrived at it. Double Play, and we're going to be doing a good one and a bad one. And sometimes, this time, we will have to watch a movie we've never seen. We're only aware of it by the punchlines of the movie or just the fact that we can't believe this was made, stuff like that.
Might be two movies we've never seen. You're going to have to watch Cinderella Man eventually.
We're watching a movie today with a chimpanzee playing third base. That's what we're doing. And you, if you're out there, and you might be like me, you've seen this movie poster, you've seen this movie in rental stores back in the day, you saw the movie, and you might have been like, oh, look at what, Matt LeBlanc in a monkey playing baseball movie? But you might have never watched it. I don't know how. I had never seen it.
Nope. No.
Obviously, you've seen Moneyball.
We both have seen Moneyball, yeah.
I had never seen it.
And, right.
It was an experience.
It was something else. We probably talk about Moneyball first.
We're going to talk about Moneyball first.
We're familiar with.
We're just putting the concept over.
Right, we're just telling people what it is.
So, first half of each show, the good one?
Yes.
Second half, the bad one.
Or, but like, I don't like saying good
you
and bad.
You keep saying that.
What if it's a
It's obvious what we're doing.
But what if I end up liking the bad one more than... That's going to happen.
You only have this movie in here because of the concept of good and bad. Right. Now, if you discover that you like it...
Culture has decided to be good and bad.
If you decide you like it, that's on you.
Yeah.
But this is regarded as a good movie, and this is regarded as a bad movie.
Right.
So you can call them that.
All right. I still don't like that. Okay.
Why?
Because
the good... The bad.
Good critic never.
I want you sitting in front of a bad
anything.
Movie every time. The good, the bad.
That's fine. I don't. That's fine. I'll do that. See, I'm unlike you. I'm not. I don't have this giant ego. I don't need. I'm perfectly comfortable coming here.
Don't look me directly in the eyes, boy.
You have. It's right. I am much younger than you. I'm glad you're acknowledging that.
You're what? 6 months younger than me?
Seven.
7 months. Seven. No, I thought you were October.
November.
You're November.
November.
So 79. I'm April 79. Okay. But that's an. We're basically the same age.
Right.
We basically have the same palette of movies to draw from.
Right. I'm much brighter than you, but right. Yes. Yeah,
you're so, not, though.
Yeah.
You're not.
Right.
I think the dozen has proven that.
Yeah, because you. We'll see about that. Well, you mean the game we played when I. Okay. That's against me versus you. There were other people involved in those teams. You seem to be forgetting that.
You're much brighter than me?
I think so.
I make that much money.
Wow. He wrote, say wow.
We have fun.
We do. It's fun. It's playful. I don't think you're a hillbilly at all.
We came up with it. Now, I do think one thing for the audience is this.
Yeah.
As we build this, and hopefully it becomes a viable property and it becomes something people look forward to,
right.
We would like for people to get involved with the picking of the movies.
Yeah.
More specifically, the pairing of the movies.
Right.
Like, what would be a good pairing of a movie? Because obviously we will get to Hoosiers. Obviously we will get to Remember the Titans. Obviously we'll get to Rudy. Obviously we'll get to a Major League or Bull Durham. But what's the good pairing to those movies? That's the key. Because when we set out to do this one, Moneyball, again, universally liked and critically acclaimed.
Right, critically, yes. The critics, right.
And then Baseball Playing Monkey.
Right.
All right.
And like, for instance, next, should we say next week or should we do that at the end of the show?
I mean, it doesn't matter. You can say it now. You say it now.
All right. So, like next week, for instance, we're doing Hoosiers.
Yep.
Critically acclaimed.
Yes. One of the all time greats.
Yes. Yeah. Hopper won the Oscar, right?
For best supporting actor. Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an Oscar winning film. And then we're gonna also cover Eddie.
So we're going from Ed to Eddie.
Right. Whoopi Goldberg, of course, coaches the New York Knicks.
So one thing before we go any further. I feel like there was a time in the 90s where a lot of these bad movies are going to come from. Because Eddie and Ed, pretty much the same time. Like, I believe from, like, 92 to 98, they just threw everything out there.
Well, it's a wild time for movies, period. I think, you know, between the independent studios rising. Yeah, I think it was kind of an unusual time for movies. You saw a lot more movies in the theater. Certainly you do now. I think there's a lot more variety out there. People willing to take chances. Sometimes the chances were...
Let's dive in. Let's dive in.
All right.
I'll let you lead it.
All right, Moneyball. Yeah, of course, 2011 film. In my opinion, it's not just a great sports movie. It's a great movie, period. It should have won Best Picture the year it came out. Of course, the year the Artist won. Moneyball is a much better movie than The Artist. And it was actually a pretty weak year for Academy Award nominated movies. You have, like, The Descendants, The Help, Hugo. I mean, Moneyball is better than those movies.
Yeah, Moneyball is a truly great movie, and there are so many sports movies that you can put in it, because this is a sports movie podcast, right? So there are so many great sports movies that you can say, oh, that's a great movie, I love it because I love the sport. But there aren't a whole lot of sports movies that transcend and just are great movies, period, across the board are incredible movies. Rocky is certainly one.
Yes.
You know, and I think Moneyball also crosses – you do not have to be a baseball fan to enjoy the performances and the writing and everything about this movie. Will you agree with that? I mean, it helps, so certainly.
So I think it's Brad Pitt's best role, like full stop. I think this is his best performance.
I have three questions written down. One of those questions is about Brad Pitt and this movie. I think it's absolutely fantastic. I also think it's Jonah Hill's best.
I agree. but I mean, Brad Pitt's won an Oscar for another movie.
Yeah.
You know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where this is... He's better in this. He's amazing in this.
Brad,
it's a delicate role.
Brad Pitt in this movie, you just want to be. You just want to hang out with him the whole time. I never want the camera to be off of him. Is what I'm trying to say. And it's not like he's doing this. It's not like he's doing this part that is written to appeal to you. It's just something about him. He's perfect, and I could see him being Billy Bean. It's fantastic performance.
Yeah, it's not an entirely likable guy. Like he has
that's
some,
what I'm trying to say.
Some rage issues.
Yeah,
he's obviously
he's a little prudish, a little standoffish. You know.
Yeah, he can be cold. He has a huge ego.
Yeah.
Be dismissive to some of the guys.
The way Billy Bean is written in this movie is not necessarily somebody you're going to like, but the way Brad Pitt plays it. It's just how Brad Pitt brings an everyman quality to a role is crazy because he's not everyman.
No,
and that's it's awesome. It's a great movie, and we're gonna break it down. I know, but did you think so? The book obviously existed beforehand. Michael Lewis, right?
Lewis, great writer. Big Short.
One of the
Blindside, which is a great book, bad movie.
This is probably one of the five most important sports books ever written.
Oh yeah. I mean, look at the game today. Yeah. Every single game,
right.
Every single team in baseball is run like Moneyball now.
Yeah.
And, every single one.
And this book was kind of shed light on the movement of the analytics and everything, yep. And it normalized it. And when I found out they were making a movie about that book and that concept, I was like, no.
Oh, wow.
That's not going to work. Imagine that idea. It's a book about analytics in baseball.
Right.
And you're going to make a movie out of that? And you're going to get an A-list star to star in it? No.
It was originally supposed to be Brad Pitt and Steven Soderbergh. So when that was announced, I was like, all right, this could work. Soderbergh's a great director. And then they said it's Bennett Miller. And I'm not a huge Capote fan. And that's the only other movie he did before this.
Well, I don't know who Bennett Miller is.
Bennett Miller's the director. He's only directed three films his entire career. Capote, this, and Foxcatcher. That's in 2014. He hasn't directed a movie since.
Is Foxcatcher good?
I've never seen it. I really want to. I should see it.
It's only been out 9 years. You haven't had time to see it, have you?
I have had time. I just keep forgetting about it. It's a blind spot for me.
I have some of those.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I should see Fox.
1995.
So that's gone for you?
Don't remember it at all.
Really?
Nah.
Yeah.
Braveheart came out that year.
Not that. Not
95 wasn't a great movie.
95 was not a great movie.
We're going to get to 96 in a little bit.
Yes,
but,
we are.
but anyway, so 2011. Now, I have a question for you about Moneyball. Because I do think we need to break down everything that goes into it a little bit. But is there a part of you? I don't want to say that I come from the school of thought. Is it possible we overrate it a tad because sports movies in this day and age are so rare? And well-made sports movies are even more rare. Back in the 80s and 90s, you had sports movies every year, covering every sport for every imagination. Now, you're lucky to get one every 2 or 3 years. And Moneyball was kind of in that desert where they just don't make sports movies that much anymore.
I don't think so. I think I might overrate it for another reason. Because I believe in this. Like, I'm a big analytics guy. I love this movement. I love the idea of a movie that kind of takes the cliches of sport. Like, have you seen Trouble with the Curve?
I've not. I'm aware of it.
It's terrible. But it's like the anti-money.
John Hamm?
No.
Oh, John Hamm. He's Million Dollar Arm, isn't he?
It's Million Dollar Arm. I mean, yeah. This is with Clint Eastwood.
Okay, yeah.
He's in this. He didn't direct it. But I think it's a lousy movie. And it's like, oh, it's so cliched. Like, oh, the scouts are right. No, you got to go by your gut. Where this takes it, and it's like, no, like, there is actual science to this. There is a real way to do this. Not the old-fashioned way. Not the heartwarming way.
Well, what I like...
old calculated way.
I think my favorite scene of the whole movie is the first time Billy and...
Jonah Hill's character.
Jonah Hill's, yeah,
really Paul P. D.
Yeah, when Billy and Peter Brand's when he brings Peter Brand into the scouting meeting, right?
Yeah,
and you got all the old white scouts around the table, and this I think it does a great job of being realistic about how the scouts would approach this, and it doesn't poke fun of them.
I think it does.
I don't think it pokes fun at them a lot.
It does. One got a hearing aid. They're all old as shit.
I felt like they were making some salient points, and they were making the points that scouts would make. And I thought it was handled pretty decently.
Well, it was quotes directly from the book. Like he looks good in a pair of jeans. Like that's what the scout actually.
Well, the one time the one guy says the lead guy that ends up turning on everything.
Brady Fuse says character.
Yeah, he says, oh, this guy can play, and we need guys that can play.
Right.
What a quote that is.
Yeah.
Don't you? But maybe it is the baseball nerd in you that they take you in behind the scenes of him meeting with scouts and then all of it. Because I said that was my favorite scene, but there's also the time when him and Peter Brand are sitting there and they're talking to GMs around the league. That's fun to watch.
Doing a trade, like the trade deadline.
Yeah, and he hangs
Ricardo Rincon.
Yeah, and when he says, you know, when you get the answer, you won't hang up. And it was just stuff like that.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, I don't know if a non-baseball fan would enjoy that. I don't know. It might be too inside, but I think the other stuff, like his stuff with his daughter, kind of just a man that's really struggling to kind of have this new idea and how people are rejecting it. I think that's universal.
I think non-fans can appreciate it because they're using that as it's just that's his struggle. Right. Some movies a guy has a struggle in war. But this is his struggle and this is his fight. He's fighting the system, and that's a universal truth, and that's a universal appealing thing to audiences. He is fighting a system and he is changing a system. The system just happens to be baseball and scouts and all that stuff. It's superbly well acted. It's superbly well written.
I wonder if someone, okay, you're old like me, so we remember when this idea was rejected.
I am older than you in age. Yes. You are older than me in the way you live your life.
That's not true at all. That's not true.
What are you doing tonight?
I'm taping The Dozen tonight.
What are you doing tonight?
And I'm going to go home. I'll see my wife.
Uh-huh.
I'll have a cider or two. And we're moving, so I'm getting stuff ready for that.
Uh-huh.
We have a very, I'm much younger.
You're going to have a couple of ciders, and then you're checking on your baseball simulator team. Mm-hmm.
And what are you going to do tonight?
Pussy. Lots of it.
Wow. Good for you.
Lots of it.
Wow. It's an exciting night for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's true. My question is, we remember when this idea of stats was rejected.
Right.
You know, this was like, this is just like you saw in The Scattering, we'd have that same conversations with older relatives or whatever.
Yeah.
Would those people reject this movie? Well, like the cliched baseball fan is all about gut, who doesn't like stats. Are they going to look at this movie and not enjoy it? The less analytical baseball fan.
I don't think so because it's inside baseball. It's inside the game that they love. And even though it's presenting an idea they might not be on board with, it's a baseball movie that you're going to enjoy that aspect of it, right? And maybe you can say, well, I still think it's more important how guys look on the hoof. Maybe you can say these old ideas. But ultimately, I guess my question to that is, how many of those guys are left? You think it's a significant community of people that just don't give a shit about analytics at all or don't believe in them? Because you can not give a shit about it, but still – understand that they are, I mean, it is a real move, a real thing.
Yeah, I think maybe you're right. Maybe the, you know, where the teams have all kind of fallen and so you have the fans as well.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a take I have, and I don't know if you agree or not. I think that this is a baseball movie for the brain. I think Field of Dreams is a baseball movie for the heart, and Bull Durham is a baseball movie for the gut. And I think it kind of depends on how you kind of enjoyed the game is where you might fall with those three things.
I kind of like that.
I'm not a gut guy.
It's Major League, just a baseball for the funny bone?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. You know,
I like to laugh, I like to think, and I think I am overly sentimental with stuff. But I'm not a big gut guy, and I don't really like Bull Durham as much as those other three. No, I don't like it as much as those other three.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll get to Bull Durham later. I would say to me, my favorite baseball movies are Major League, Bull Durham.
And Ed.
We'll get to Ed in a minute, yeah. We'll see if it makes the list.
Right.
I almost feel like we should give him a time. We're going to talk about Ed soon. We're talking about Moneyball right now, but Ed's coming.
Yeah.
Moneyball's weird to me. Moneyball's the best movie out of all those, I think.
I think Field of Dreams is incredible.
As far as being made.
I think Field of Dreams is an incredibly made movie.
If you think about the star power in this movie, just from...
the star power. The cast is stacked.
I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it, in a role but we're going to get to him.
Yeah, we have to, because I have a whole thing on that.
Okay, let's do that.
Let's get it. Art Howe.
First of all, I have several questions to ask. I'm going to ask you these questions, okay?
Yeah,
all
right.
Number one.
Yeah.
How well do you think the players were cast in this film? Because you have Scott Hattieburg, which is Chris Pratt. And, talk about star power. This was before he was Chris Pratt. But you got him. You got the guy that played David Justice, who looks like a baseball player.
Yeah, he does. He's older, like a veteran baseball player.
Whoever played Jeremy Giambi looked great. I think a lot of times sports movies live and die on how believable the actor-athletes are. And this one passes with flying colors, I think.
Yeah, and they even had Royce Clayton, who was, of course, a Major League Baseball veteran. He played Miguel Tejada. obviously there's an age difference there, but just it just helps having like a real shortstop turning that double play when they're showing the action in the field.
The guy that plays Chad Bradford looks like a guy who would be struggling with his career in the middle
of his
career.
Even the guy that plays Mike McNaughty, the guy that retires at the end, or is forced to retire, he's cut. He looks like an older veteran pitcher. He's got the knee braces on, but even though he has a receding hairline, but he still looks athletic. He's really good casting.
Yeah, I thought and Pratt, I thought, was fantastic
as
Hattiesburg.
That's great.
It's just a I think they really handle the casting of the players well, which is if you're building a sports movie, that's your building block first. Although I think this one obviously
this movie, I don't think that's the case.
This one obviously they started with the big dogs at the top.
Yeah.
But I think when you're setting out just any sports movie, if you get that piece wrong, you're fighting a losing battle.
See, when they originally made the movie, it was supposed to be Brad Pitt, always as Billy Bean. This is kind of he ended up becoming a producer because they ran out of funding and stuff. But Dimitri Martin, the comedian, was supposed to be the Jonah Hill role. And then when
that wouldn't work at all.
That was original. And then when the director Bennett Miller agrees with you, and he got rid of Martin and put Jonah Hill in. And I think that's the core. I think if they got that wrong, then this movie doesn't work. I think the players could have not been cast as well, and it still would have worked. But every part of this movie is perfect.
If Brad Pitt as Billy Bean is walking into a locker room and he's talking to a guy that's supposed to be a big time player on the field and change the shape of their franchise, and the guy looks like he ought to be at ballet practice or he looks like he ought to be blogging, it ain't gonna work as well. I think the David Justice character, particularly that scene where David Justice is in the batting cage and he's just whapping balls. And the sound of the bat and everything. If that actor is not a good enough athlete to do that, that scene sucks.
He's not just a good enough athlete. I also liked how he had like this gravitas to him. He's like, well, I'm making $7.5 million a year. Like, yeah. I deserve to be here.
He had that. He looked like a guy who probably was a little bit better than everybody around him.
Yeah.
And had been for a long time.
It's hard for an actor to do that when you're sharing a set with Brad Pitt. Like, in real life, the status was completely flipped.
All right, question two.
Okay.
Art Howe.
This is great.
This
is like one of my favorite things ever.
This is one of the biggest questions with this movie. Art Howe is just a fucking curmudgeon in this movie.
He's such an asshole.
He's a miserable cunt.
Movie.
He's a miserable asshole this entire movie. And this is, as much as you talk about star power, having an actor with the chops of Philip Seymour Hoffman in this role is crazy.
It's wild. So there is a logical reason why he's in this, because the director, Bennett Miller, directed Capote, which Seymour Hoffman won the Oscar for. And I guess Hoffman's schedule just cleared up. And because I looked into this, I'm like, how is this happening?
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, like, I heard you're doing this Moneyball thing with Brad Pitt. Like, I read the script. Is Art Howe still available? And Miller's like, we're going to cast it, but yeah, it's yours. And he comes in, and he is the greatest asshole. Like, one of the great, like, villains without being, like, evil in movie history.
He doesn't do anything bad.
No.
He just doesn't sign off on everything that's good.
He's an asshole about everything, though. He has the worst attitude, the worst chip on his shoulder. But it's because it's Hoffman, though, it's believable.
But I almost think, if I have Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
I gotta find something bigger. I gotta do that, and then
what do you have him do in this movie?
There's this idea of, I don't think the 2002 A's in real life, I don't think Art Howe was this guy.
Well, there's a big debate about that. So Art Howe has come out publicly a number of times, said he's really doesn't appreciate how he was viewed in the book and the movie, especially the movie. He takes the side of like, I'm so upset my boss feels this way about me. Having said all that, the A's did win 102 games. And they did let him go to the Mets. Billy Bean and Art Howe never got along, especially at the end. It was very contentious. Billy Bean doesn't like Art Howe. Art Howe doesn't like Billy Bean. And I think there's a lot of stuff he didn't sign off on. And Art Howe went to the Mets, and he was a shitty-ass manager for 2 years and got fired. Like, Art Howe, the only reason he was successful is because Billy Bean's a genius.
So you think the portrayal here might be accurate and fair?
It's a lot more accurate than Art Howe is saying it is.
Okay. All right. See, I that's something that I haven't...
I can't imagine he was a complete and total asshole 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Like, no human being is like that.
No, there's no point in this movie where Art Howe smiles. There's no point in this movie where Art Howe is like, they're winning 22 games in a row. And at no point does he say, Billy, this might work.
Yeah.
This is a good idea. No, that son of a bitch is sitting with his arms folded in the 19th game of a winning streak, just pissed off at the world.
I even love like his hair. Like, he shaves it down, but there's still, like, a little stubble there. It's very unusual.
Philip Seymour Hoffman looks like a baseball lifer.
Yeah.
He's got that dumpiness to him of a manager, a guy who's been in the manager's seat for a while.
I got to look up right now. So this movie came out in 2009. 2011, excuse me.
How much longer did Philip Seymour Hoffman live?
Well, he only lived like 3 more years. Yeah. I want to know I think he was our age when he made this movie.
Really?
67. He was 44. Yeah. 43 when he made this movie.
So we're 43 now.
Yeah, he's about our age. He looks like he's like 58.
Yeah.
It's wild. I'm not saying Hoffman was ever a guy that looked amazing, but like he, I don't know if he's because such a good actor, the makeup or what it was, but he looks like a 58-year-old manager.
So Philip Seymour Hoffman is going to play a key role when Ed comes back around.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I've got a big Philip Seymour Hoffman plot point when
he
comes back around.
Okay.
My next question, why isn't Brad Pitt in more sports movies? I know the actual answer to that, but because he's just in big movies, period, and he's got a lot on his plate. But, yes. Man, the way he acted in this one, could you see a world where he's a younger him, but he's a end-of-the-road quarterback in the NFL? Yeah, you could see that. Could you see him being a young basketball coach? Could he have played? I'm just taking movies that obviously weren't that good, but – like, could he have been the coach in Glory Road and made that movie a lot better? Yeah, like, he could be in so many sports movies.
The reason he liked this one is because it is like subversive. It does take the sports movie cliche and turn on its head a little bit. And that's what drew him to it. He loved the book. He loves the statistical analysis. He loved the idea of someone going against the system.
Is he a big baseball fan?
I don't think he's huge, but he really appreciated the book and appreciated what Billy Beane was going through. Bennett Miller was not a big baseball fan, kind of liked it. But the writers, I always mispronounce his name, Steve Zion and then Aaron Sorkin,
Aaron Sorkin was on this?
Sorkin co-wrote this.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and he's a huge baseball fan.
Well, I can feel it now.
And there's a great long shot of Brad Pitt kind of walking through the corridor and then goes into the locker room, and he's kind of giving – it's not like –
there's not a lot of walk and talks in this one.
There's not, but there is that walk and talk with, and the camera just kind of stays on him. That's great. But Steve Zion is a great writer. He has written let me see here. I mean, it's a laundry list here. Gangs of New York, The First Mission Impossible, Schindler's List, Awakenings. So he co-wrote it. Aaron Sorkin.
Lord, what a weird collection of movies.
No, co-wrote The Irishman as well.
Well, I wouldn't.
I love The Irishman.
You love The Irishman?
It's a great movie.
Well, that's you're weird.
No, I'm not. It's a great movie about aging. It's a fantastic.
You know what my favorite part about The Irishman was?
What's that?
When Robert,
which is brilliant.
When Robert De Niro was supposed to be a 25-year-old man or 30-year-old man beating up a guy, and he went.
Everyone brings that up. Yep. Do you like the movie The Godfather?
And then there's that one scene where he's supposed to throw a gun in the river, mm-hmm. and he climbs up down over rocks, and it takes him 45 minutes to get back up.
You like The Godfather?
It's fine.
I mean, obviously,
I know it's one of the great movies of all time.
Yes, and that doesn't bother you when James Caan is punching, and he misses him by a good country mile.
Well, you could call that Rocky for that too. That'd be a better one.
No, the Rocky one's way better. The one
Rocky's got a
Godfather. He misses him by a three.
I've seen The Godfather twice. I've seen The Godfather twice.
Twice. Watch it again.
Why are you mad at me?
You should watch it. Every man should watch Godfather at least 20 times.
No.
It's the greatest movie ever.
No. Get out of your fucking Northeast bubble. We don't all suck the Godfather's dick all of our lives. And in other parts of this country, it ain't all about the Godfather. All right? Where were we?
What movie? What movie? What is Gone with the Wind? Is that what you guys
watch? That was made in 1939.
Is that what you watch over and over and over again in the South? You say Northeast bubble. What's great? What am I missing that my bubble was?
Why do I have to watch The Godfather?
It's so great. It's an amazing movie.
Goodfellas is good. How about I watch that?
Great.
All right. My next question. Oh, that was actually all I had. I had the we have to acknowledge the fact that they absolutely took some liberties with the season the way it played out, right?
What do you mean?
Well, it is made to seem like the hero of the 2002 A's was Scott Hattiesburg.
Oh, I understand.
And
yeah,
Chad Bradford.
So there's no mention of the big threes.
Miguel Tejada.
Tejada. Yeah. Right.
There's no mention. Billy Koch is in there a little bit. Tejada, you see him a couple times. There's no mention of the fact that he was, I think he won the MVP that year.
Think so.
Yeah, Tejada had an MVP season.
Right.
You had Mulder, Zito, Hudson, who absolutely, you can say whatever you want about Moneyball. Any scout in the world would have looked at those three and picked them Those were the
right.
None of those
and
were
those
like,
guys were brought about by traditional scouting.
None of those were fines.
Right.
None of those were values.
Right.
They were all legitimate pitchers at any organization, regardless of how they thought about baseball and analytics, would have picked them.
Absolutely right.
So there's no mention of those guys at all. And it is made to seem like Scott Hattieburg is a key figure in this season and all that.
He wasn't a key figure, but he wasn't the key figure.
No. I mean, I just named you five that were bigger.
I agree completely.
Yeah, so.
I mean, like, Jermaine Dye was a bigger player.
The team was loaded.
Yeah. They weren't as loaded the year before, though.
They weren't as loaded as the year before. But they were really fucking good.
Yeah.
And there were players there that didn't exactly fit the Moneyball stereotype.
Agree.
And they don't mention that at all, which I understand for storytelling purposes, but come on.
I agree. I will say the A's have made the playoffs 11 times this century and never once went to the World Series. That's wild. They only went to the LCS once, right? Like, that's crazy.
Was it 2001?
No, it was like 2008 or 9.
They weren't the LCS? That wasn't the Jeter play in 2001?
No, it was the LDS. It was the first round.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the movie is great. It's fantastic, but I think you have to acknowledge that they absolutely whitewashed some of the.
Oh, of course. Of no. That goes about. I mean, honestly, it goes about saying, but that's absolutely true. Those three pitchers were the main reason. But the reason the book and the movie are so important, though, like you said, it's one of the five most important books. It's not because of the big three. It's because this mindset completely changed baseball, and now like teams like the Astros. Who have won twice. I know they cheated the first time, whatever, but like you have teams that.
Well, the Red Sox have won four World Series since 2000, and they were Moneyball,
yep.
Right? So, I mean, it's. They even talk about. I like that. Even in this movie, they talk about Kevin Youkilis, the Greek god of walks. Yep. And
a huge part of the book.
Yeah.
As was Jeremy Brown, the catcher at the end they talk about too, the big fat catcher who falls down running first. But.
So there's those guys that. The Greek god of walks. Now, just remembering that scene. I love Jonah Hill in this movie.
Jonah Hill's fantastic. This is the first time you saw Jonah Hill, and he wasn't doing like kind of a goofy comedy. And it's like, wow, this guy's like real chops.
This was before Wolf of Wall Street, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah, 2 or 3 years before.
Yeah. It feels like miles before. But you're right. It was only a couple years before.
Yeah.
This was the year I'm looking right now. Christopher Plummer won the Oscar for Beginners. I mean, I couldn't tell you a thing about Beginners.
I will say this: movie could have used naked Margot Robbie.
Yeah, well, I think every movie could have.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's going to be one of my questions. Could this movie have used a naked Margot Robbie?
Yes, every movie. What movie couldn't use that? It's not a very good question.
Babe, Pig in the City?
I think it's still good.
Absolutely, it would stick out like a sore thumb.
It's fine. It doesn't matter.
If you're watching like Toy Story and all of a sudden Margot Robbie's naked, that just changes the whole thing.
I think it makes it a better movie. Maybe Andy walks in, that's his mom. Oh, sorry, mom. Closes the door, runs away.
Mom! Get out! All right, what else you got on Moneyball?
No, I just think that like Jonah Hill should have won, you know, should have been seriously considered for the Oscar. It wasn't going to happen because he was lucky to get nominated back then. But like looking back at it now, like.
Yeah. Now, I want to give a couple shout outs.
Okay.
And you probably know the name of the actor. It might be pulled up. The guy who plays Ron Washington.
Oh, I'll have to look him up.
I think in a movie that doesn't have much comic relief, doesn't really need it.
Right.
But doesn't have it. He has
Brent Jennings.
He has the comic lines.
Great timing.
In the movie. Yeah. When they're sitting with Hattieburg and he says, "Is it hard?" And Brad Pitt's like, "Nah, it's incredibly hard." And then the second thing he says is, I don't know, he says one more really funny line there before they get out.
I remember the one about first base is great though.
Yeah.
And Pitt reacts to it perfectly. He's like, "Well, you know, we'll teach
you
how."
He keeps going. Yeah, Pitt just rolls through. Pitt is great in this movie about just rolling through everything.
Yes.
Just continually rolling over with the problem. Now, one last question from me. The daughter and the ex-wife stuff.
So ex-wife put by Robin Wright Penn.
Do you need it in there to humanize him?
Yes.
Otherwise, it's not really.
I think it's also the most important part of the movie, and it.
You think?
As far as the Billy Beane character is concerned, not from.
You're giving him motivation.
Everything. I mean, it's the reason he stays in Oakland. I mean, and you have to believe he's gonna. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense why he stays in Oakland.
Okay.
But, you know, he hears his daughter sing that song, and he's like, and his daughter even says up top some foreshadowing, which is like, "Oh, if you lose your job, you're gonna have to move away." And, you know, obviously in this case, he'd be getting a better job moving away. But either way, it still has the same result to her.
Yeah. And, yeah, I guess, and she's also the reason that pulls the one time where they got the big winning streak and he's just riding along and she pulls him back to the ballpark.
Yes.
She's the reason he comes back to the ballpark. I feel like there's a little bit of symbolism there.
Yeah, you can tell the daughter's like.
No, I've never really read the book. I assume she's not in the book. They just added her for the movie.
Oh, Christ, I haven't read the book in a long time.
Yeah.
I know you have trouble reading, but I did read the book. And I remember his family being brought up. I remember a lot. A time being spent on his past, like the movie does.
You know, the first round pick.
He's a bust.
Have you ever read The Bad Guys Won by Jeff Perlman?
Because
that gives some backstory on Billy Bean in there, too, when it talks about Bean and Strawberry kind of being the building blocks back in the early 80s.
So, yeah, that's a great book.
I read that one.
You did, yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't just look at the pictures?
I've read just as many sports books as you, Clemmer.
Okay. Yeah, have as many books, period. Probably not.
First of all,
books that aren't sports
first
books?
Of all, I was a writer for 15 years. Mm. My job before this was a speech writer for a Fortune 500 CEO. So I can write. I can read and write.
I'm stunned to hear this. I didn't know this. Wow. You don't seem that way. You know.
I could write you under the fucking table.
Really?
Yes.
Can you read me under the table, though? I said, have you read any books that aren't sports books?
I read Where the Red Fern Grows.
Seventh grade?
Many of the John Grisham novels.
Wow. Okay. How are we going to rate these movies? This is something we've had a debate about a number of times. You've seen one.
Want to do a scale of 1 to 100?
That's how Lights, Camera, Barstool does it. Now, the issue is you want to rate it only on a sports movie.
How much I enjoy it.
That's fine. You can do it as much as you enjoy it, but it should be ranked as movies, not just sports movies.
No, I think they should be ranked as sports movies.
I disagree.
This is a sports movie podcast. If you don't go Lights, Camera, Barstool, that's a movie podcast. This is a sports movie podcast, right? I know it's yours. It's yours.
Yeah.
But you're just like every other movie podcast if you don't put the sports element in there. This might not be a great movie, but as a sports movie, it's one of my favorites. I'm not speaking of Moneyball. I'm speaking as in
I think it's a different podcast than most. I have the greatest hillbilly writer that can't read on my show. I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
How many times are you going to do that?
A lot. It's going to be a common thread.
Okay.
It's a common thread. How many times are you going to call me old?
You're old.
You're old.
You're older.
See, you've done that way more than I made fun of you for being illiterate.
I feel like illiterate is worse than old.
Well, you can learn it.
All right, let me ask you this question. Is Moneyball a top five baseball movie?
I think it is.
I think it is, too. Now, the problem is it came along so late that it now has to displace one that was embedded in my top five, right? Like, I would say, and without question, Major League, Bull Durham.
Not Bull Durham for me.
For me. Well, I was talking about myself, right. If that's okay for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Major League, Bull Durham, Field of Dreams. And then you would get into something like Eight Men Out, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then you would get into something like The Natural, which I didn't really love. A League of Their Own.
Not for me.
League of Their Own is way up there. And for me, the greatest of all the little kid baseball movies is Little Big League, which is close. But Moneyball, to me, without even thinking, is at least fourth.
Yeah, I think I agree.
I think I put Major League Bull Durham and Field of Dreams as my permanent top three. And then you start discussing, is it better than Field of Dreams? Is it better than Bull Durham? And you obviously think it is better than Bull Durham.
For me, it's Field of Dreams, number one. And it's either this or Natural for number two.
Do you think this movie works as well? I'm trying to think of a contemporary actor. Let's say Kevin Costner plays Billy Bean.
Oh, so you're talking about if it was made like 10 years earlier, say, or whatever?
Yeah. Well, I guess Costner works. But Matt Damon plays Billy Bean.
Matt Damon's a great actor.
Philip Seymour Hoffman plays Billy Bean. Loses about, instead of goes.
I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman can do anything. I mean, so I would.
Okay.
You're talking about great, like Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, he's a great, great actor.
Let's say the movie was made today. Chris Pratt as Billy Bean.
You see, that's harder. You mentioned earlier, like, Josh Lucas, right? Yeah. That would have been, like, the
so that was the
cheaper version, right?
Yeah, that cheaper version. So does this movie work if Josh Lucas plays Billy Bean?
Sure, it doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
Like, and I also think, like, Bennett Miller directing it, is a great long shot of when his car just goes, it takes the exit ramp, and you can see he's, like, taking the exit ramp from the path. He's like, there's all these sort of double implications there. And the script's fantastic.
What's the moment in this movie where it flips in your mind, oh, I'm watching something really, really good? Because like I said, when I heard this book was being made in the movie, I went into it skeptically, like, I don't think this is going to work, guys. But as you're watching it, something flips in your mind, like, oh, I'm all the way in. What was your all the
pretty
way in
early
moment?
Like, I think when he meets with the scouts, because I've never seen that happen before in a movie. Like, I've never seen the scouts.
Might be the scout. Does the meeting with the scouts happen before he goes to Cleveland and tries to get Rincon?
Yeah.
Then when he notices that they're listening to Peter Brand,
yeah.
And that whole meeting is cool too. Really, anytime he's talking,
it's a great meeting. That's a great scene.
There's not a meeting scene in this movie. There's not a scouting scene. There's not a phone call scene that isn't great.
It's funny, we're talking about meetings. Like, this movie could have been very boring very easily.
Nothing we just described is exciting. But in the hands of these actors and writers, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you had one scene to watch for the rest of your life from this movie. What is it?
I think if one scene, I don't know if this counts as a scene, but that 20th, when they get the 20th game. Like, I know it's the winning moment.
Yeah.
I also really love the John Henry scene. Because you see the confliction.
At the end?
Yeah.
I also love the fact that they're just at Fenway Park in, like, December, and it's gray.
Well, it wasn't supposed to rain, they were on such a tight budget, and it was raining that day, and Miller's like, all right, we're going to use
it. But it looked exactly like a recruiting trip I think would go.
It looked, of course. Yeah. It was great. It was like, oh, but they it was supposed to be, like, they wanted the nice weather for it to rain. They were all disappointed. They're like, no, we can use this. But I think the rain works better.
I think it works a lot better.
It's like his mind is conflicted, and you can see the confliction in the weather. It's really well done. There's not a misstep in this movie. I honestly, like, I love Field of Dreams. I really do. Field of Dreams has some problems. Like, the daughter, I think, is poorly cast. Well, obviously, we'll get into that movie eventually. But this movie, I don't like as much, but it has fewer problems. This movie doesn't have, I don't think there's a singular moment. This is like a perfect movie.
All right, let's rate this movie.
So how are we doing this?
It's your show. God damn it. Rate the fucking movie.
I'm rating it based on movies. I don't like the sports movie. I think that.
You do it your way. Let me do it my way.
I think it simplifies things when you do it your way. I'm going to give this.
Why shouldn't it be simplified? I'll just say it like this. If you're watching these movies, okay? If you're watching this podcast, I'll just tell you how I do it. I have favorite movies that might not be as good as certain movies, right? The Natural is a better made movie than Little Big League. I like Little Big League more. I watch it more. It rates higher for me.
Okay, that's fine. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that mentality.
Judge them as movies.
But I also, it's what I like better.
Okay, but this is what I said.
I just don't want to judge it based on a sports movie, like, grade curve. I don't like that. That's the only issue I have with your grading system.
I don't, if I told you that Little Big League was a 95 as a movie, you would laugh at me.
Yeah.
I think it's a 95 as a sports movie. I'm only using that number for
Right.
Okay.
So it would be 85 as a regular
movie? I'll go first. This movie, out of 100?
50's average.
50's average. I mean, I'm giving this like a 92. And all that keeps it from perfection is my knowledge that they kind of skated around Mulder, Zito, Hudson, Dye, Koch, Tejada. And I mean, this is a fantastic movie. And there, if this movie comes on and you have 2 hours, you're never not watching it. It is imminently rewatchable.
It's 98.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, there's no flaws in this movie. There are movies that, like I said, I enjoy Field of Dreams more. That's probably going to, well, I'll rewatch it for the show, but that's probably going to get 100 from me. This is a 98. There's not too many sports movies I enjoy more than this. There's not too many movies I enjoy more than this. This is as good as it gets, and there's not a single misstep. It's dealing with something I'm very passionate about. I love analytics. I love baseball. And it hits all. There's so much intelligence movie. They get all the players' names right. We'll talk about this with Ed in a second, who gets everything wrong. But, like, they get so many things right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's they have a really tough degree of difficulty, and they pull it off.
I also love the way they integrate your Scott Van Pelt, your Dan Patrick, the clips they use telling the story of the A's. I assume those were just the actual
ESPN footage.
They weave all that in.
I love how they weave in the history. Like, when they are passing, when they get the 17th win, they show, like, the 1939 Yankees. They actually show the footage. I love stuff like that.
One mini question, because I know we got to get to Ed.
Yep.
Do you think it's a little disingenuous crescendo and climaxing with the 22-game winning streak and all, just kind of dusting over the fact they got beat out of the playoffs again?
No, because that's not even how the movie ends. The movie ends with him making the decision that he's at peace with staying in Oakland. The movie's not about the win streak. It is and it isn't. It's about Billy Beane's
journey. The win streak is used to tell the journey of
Billy Beane. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and that's why I love that it doesn't end with that. It doesn't end with the – it could have just ended the 20th win. But it actually ends with him going to Boston and have to make a personal choice.
That's Moneyball then. So Moneyball, 98 from you.
We both love it.
92. I love it. Love. I can't guarantee you it's in my top five sports movies of all time. I think in this journey I'll find out. But I know that I love Hoosiers. I know that I love Major League. I know that I love these movies. So I'm going to
– I can't guarantee anything, but there's a very good chance.
I might come back and knock it back to 96 when we get through all these things.
Just have
Why
to make
not?
Decision.
Why can't I do what I do?
You said 92.
92. That's a good-ass movie.
Say 98.
That's a good-ass movie.
I said 98.
All right, that's a good-ass movie?
Think with that.
What we're about to talk about?
Oh, Ed?
Is not a good-ass movie. Let me go pee.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Ed. We're going to watch Ed.
We watched Ed.
We're going to talk Ed.
Yes.
Ed. That's what we're going to talk about on a podcast in 2023.
Yeah. Of course, the 1996 movie starring Matt
LeBlanc. Of course.
The tagline, by the way, minor league, major friendship.
That's a terrible tagline.
Look at that friendship.
That's a terrible tagline.
Friendship right there.
First of all, they're not like really friends until like an hour into the movie.
Oh, easily. There's the movie.
Okay. So Ed is a movie. little synopsis. Correct me if I get anything wrong.
No, please.
Matt LeBlanc is a country bumpkin that is starting his rookie year in low minor league baseball. And as a promotional stunt, they acquire a mascot who just happened to be a chimp out of Mickey Mantle's personal collection.
Right.
Mickey Mantle's chimpanzee. They sign him as a mascot. He shows up. They learn he can play baseball. He becomes the starting third baseman for the Santa Rosa Rockets. And as he does this, his friendship with Matt LeBlanc's character blooms, and leading up to the hijinks and hilarity of Ed.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Also, you know, Matt LeBlanc's character, Jack Deuce Cooper. Deuce finds love.
Deuce Cooper. First of all, there's so much. Okay, you might be wondering, is it so bad that it's good? If you get into that sort of thing, I think, it might be.
Yeah.
Because it is so bad, so poorly made, so poorly thought out, so hysterically poorly written, that it is just a fiasco from moment one.
It's so terrible, but it is wildly entertaining because you just like it constantly one-ups itself. It's like, well, it can't get any worse, and it manages to do so every single 10 minutes.
There's two questions to answer about this movie, and you're going to answer them exactly how I think you're going to answer them.
All right.
Is this a good movie?
No, this is like one of the worst movies.
Correct.
I've seen.
Were you ever bored?
No. Not for a second.
Not for a second are you bored. No. There's not 1 second in watching this movie where you are like, all right. Oh, no. My God. It is captivating.
It is wild.
And it grabbed my attention from the start because Ed doesn't show up to about 20 minutes into the movie. Okay. But our first scene, we meet Deuce Cooper.
Right.
On his family's farm in Oregon.
No, he's in the tryout.
Is that right?
So he's in the,
that's right. That's right.
It makes no sense. They're like, who's seen you pitch? And he basically says nobody.
But my mom. He says my mom.
But like, how have you learned to play baseball then? Like, how have you learned the rule? Why were you isolated from society?
He shows up at a minor league tryout for the Santa Rosa Rockets. And by the way, the tryout is just so comically badly acted. It's incredible.
Well,
sets the tone immediately.
Yeah.
He shows up to tryout and he throws hard.
Yes.
And he gets a deal immediately.
You later learn 125 miles an hour.
125 miles an hour.
What?
And he's in minor league baseball.
Right.
He's throwing 125 miles an hour. But the next thing, so he leaves the tryout and he finds out he's going to be on the team. But we next see him, he's on his family farm.
Right.
Back in Oregon.
Yes.
And here is where the movie jumped into overdrive for me, where I knew, buckle up, shit's about to get crazy. He's milking cow. He hooks a bunch of cows up to a milking machine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a big barn. He's got a bunch of cows hooked up to a milking machine. But he has to turn the machine on. Do you remember how he does it?
He throws a baseball.
He picks a baseball out of his pocket and from about 100 feet away, 60 feet away, throws a baseball and hits a knob attached to the machine, turns the knob with a fastball, and starts milking all the cows.
Which is brilliant foreshadowing.
It's also implied that he does this a lot.
And he also does it later on in the movie to turn his shower on.
Yes, he does. Technique. He does later.
It's great filmmaking. They're showing you before what he can do.
To turn knobs.
Storytelling.
To turn knobs, he throws a fastball at it. Oh, my goodness. It's so delicious.
I have one question.
We have the same question. I know what you're about to ask. Go ahead.
And I don't know if you're going to be. Yeah, anyone can answer this. I actually tried to find out why. Why? So Matt LeBlanc, he's in his after his second season of Friends. Friends, you remember, was a giant sensation.
Immediately,
right? From the first episode, it was on the same night as Seinfeld. It was the hippest show on TV.
Right.
The cast was instant superstars. Why would this be the movie you choose to do? It's his first movie since Friends starts. Why do this?
I wrote
it. The script is horrible.
I wrote it differently. I wrote, who is Matt LeBlanc's agent?
Yes.
Because
Friends, practice.
Friends debuts 1994 season, 1994-95, which means 95-96 is the second season. So March of 96 is the end of the second season, or near the end of the second season of Friends.
Right. So
at that point, Friends might be the biggest show in America. At that point, Seinfeld's still on. ER might be up there still.
Yeah, which also was the second season. Like, yeah. These shows, this was like, so right, so. Just for people to understand, he probably took this between the hiatus between the first and second season. So he took this job knowing he was a massive superstar on Friends.
Right.
For one season. But yes.
I'm saying the cast of Friends in the spring of 96 were among the top 50 stars in show business.
Every woman had their hair cut like Jennifer Aniston.
Now, if you look at this phenomenon, though, it's not just Matt LeBlanc. If you look at the women of Friends in the 90s, they made decent movies. They made good movies. Kudrow's in Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Movie.
In 96, Courtney Cox is in Scream.
Right.
Gigantic movie.
Right.
Jennifer Aniston has a couple of decent little movies, but then has Office Space in 99. But the men...
So I disagree a little bit there. So David Schwimmer did a movie called App Pupil around this time, which is based on a Stephen King short story.
So you think it's just...
It's pretty good. I know Matthew Perry had some major drug issues, but he still managed to do the whole nine yards with Bruce Willis, which is okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying these are great movies.
Yeah.
Matt LeBlanc, when he was on Friends, he did two movies that were major. Ed, which is a disaster, and Lost in Space, which you can understand at least why he did that, but that's also a bad movie. But Ed is such a horrendous...
You are...
Horrible movie.
A member of the hottest cast in the world.
Right.
You could probably write your own ticket. The studios had to be lining up to get all these guys individually. And he took a movie where he plays baseball with a chimpanzee.
There's a quote in the movie. He says, I'm going to spank that monkey after the monkey takes a giant shit in his bathroom.
And he says it so heavy-handedly. It's like, I'm going to spank that monkey.
He looks directly in the camera. I'm going to spank that monkey.
All right. So many ways we can go. So many very... very awesome ways we can.
Why is he mad the monkey is shitting in the toilet? I have to stop at this for a second. Why would you be upset? Are you be happy he's not shitting in the floor? He's shitting in the toilet. He closed the bathroom door.
Let me just say this. So in the movie, they acquire the mascot. The mascot shows up, and as soon as he shows up, they say he's got a roommate. He's got to be a roommate with somebody.
Yes,
and LeBlanc is the roommate, and they cook the election. They cook they rig the short straws picking to where LeBlanc gets stuck with the monkey. So they go back to his apartment, which is a fucking mess before the monkey gets there.
But that doesn't make any sense because Matt LeBlanc was only with the team a week.
It's a mess. There's shit everywhere.
Everywhere.
There's trash everywhere. And he goes in, and the monkey starts pointing at his crotch. I gotta go to the bathroom. And Matt LeBlanc says, go outside. The monkey, the chimpanzee goes to the bathroom,
closes
the door, flushes the toilet, and LeBlanc is pissed. Can't handle it.
He's irate.
Cannot handle it. And it is just absolutely...
And the monkey then has the wherewithal to come back in, gets the spray. Why is the bathroom spray in the kitchen? We don't know. And sprays after he had a nasty shit. He's being considerate.
Okay. All right. Now, one of the things that stood out to me, okay, in this movie where a chimpanzee shows up. First of all, the chimpanzee has no handlers, no nothing.
He shows up
the way he gets there is LeBlanc is told to go to the bus stop and get him. And he gets on the bus. He said, I'm here to pick up a ball player. Last row. And he goes, and it's a chimpanzee. There's nobody handling him. There's nobody, nothing. A chimpanzee got on a bus and rode to this place. So he goes and gets him, and he brings him to the ballpark. And here's the crazy part to me, among many. Nobody on the team ever has an issue with it.
No, they love him.
Nobody on the team ever says.
Only one person says he has an issue with him.
He does it first.
No one else.
Nobody at any point says, all right, what's this fucking monkey going to do for us? Nobody says. He picks up a ball and throws it, and they're all impressed. They're all on Team Ed immediately. They're all excited about him.
He sets the glove on fire.
Yeah.
First baseman's glove gets set on fire because he throws it so hard.
So he just happens to – how does it happen where we discover he's good at baseball? He just happens to go out there and stand at third?
I mean, he saves Jack. Jack Warden plays his manager. Jack Warden, of course, 12 Angry Men, The Verdict, two of the greatest films in the 20th century.
A great actor.
I mean, fantastic. Also a great comedian. He acted in Dirty Work. For some reason, does Ed, and he's the manager.
Yeah.
And someone hits a fly ball right to his face, but luckily Ed the monkey.
Ed catches it.
And catches it.
Yeah, it's like that viral clip of Longoria that was faked. Have you seen that on Twitter where he's getting interviewed by a young lady on the first base line, and he just reaches up and catches the ball? It's exactly like that's how Ed catches the ball in front of his manager, and the manager's like, whoa. Whoa!
Got a new third baseman.
Let's try him out. And they run him down to third base. They hit him a ground ball.
By the way, the monkey is in jeans. The chimpanzee's in jeans and like a Hawaiian shirt and a Yankees cap.
Fakest chimpanzee of all time, too. Like
the mask is good.
I
think the mask is good.
There's not a whole lot of consideration to let's at least make this try to look like a real chimpanzee. They learn he can play third base, and there's not a player on the team who's like, I don't want to take my spot. There's not a player on the team who says, we're going to be a laughing stock. Nobody says that, and everybody's like, oh, my God, we got it. We got our guy. And now one thing that I think needs to be said is LeBlanc is absolutely terrible in this movie.
Horrible.
He's awful. He can't act. And that is pretty much across the board. Every player is comically bad acted by bad actors, except for Jesus.
Jim
Caviezel's in it.
It's in this movie, and he does not play along. Like, most of these guys are being goofy. It's almost like kind of a Looney Tunes.
They're circus-like. They're cartoon-like. Oh, my God. You know,
Caviezel
all that stuff.
Is, like, full method acting. Like, he's just, like, a most serious teammate. He sticks out like a bizarre sore thumb.
Well,
very strange.
That's true, and of all the actors that are there, all the players are just like, oh, my God, man. I mean, there's hysterical cartoons. There's the catcher who's just comically Mexican.
Yeah.
And it's like
– some, like, borderline racist stereotypes.
He's comically Mexican. By the way, that actor plays in McFarlane USA later.
Does he?
Yeah. He's the principal in McFarlane USA. Anyway, and there's a comically dumb guy.
Yes.
There's there all the stereotypes of a baseball team. But in the middle of all this chaos and a monkey and actors giving the worst performance you've ever seen are two coaches.
Jack Warden.
Jack Warden is the manager, and then his assistant is played by Bill Cobbs. Bill Cobbs, he's a black gentleman that is in a lot of great movies as a character actor.
You see Sopranos?
Later in Sopranos, sure. But later in 96, same year, he's in one of my top five favorite movies of all time, That Thing You Do.
That's right.
He is Del Paxton in That Thing You Do. And he is just and Warden and Cobbs are just acting. And they're sitting there, they're acting, they're in a real movie, an actual movie, and nobody else is.
I have a problem with their characters for one scene in particular. So Jack Warren's behind his desk, and then Bill Cobb comes in, and they're very happy for some reason. They're usually having a Budweiser with, like, a umbrella.
Yeah.
And they're happy because, like, cut day is coming. So they're happy they're, like, firing someone. I don't really understand.
I didn't read that as being happy. I read that as them having to do what they have to do, and they're going to have some beers to get through it.
Okay. They didn't. I guess the performance of their.
I think the umbrellas were ironic.
All right. That makes a lot more sense.
Now that brings
these guys
up
assholes?
That brings up a very important discussion. They're in the middle of a minor league season,
right?
And it's like these writers watched Major League or watched a baseball movie, and they basically played 30 games, and they decided that one of the key points of this movie is cut days coming. Cut day in the middle of the season. What?
like they expand rosters. What are you talking about?
We're going and these players are playing and they're all scared to not be bad because the cut day is coming. I think, you know what I think? I think these writers were tasked to write a movie about a baseball playing chimpanzee. And they watched Major League. And they watched the first 20 minutes of Major League because cut day was a big part of the early part of Major League. And they even do the same shot where they open the locker and you see if there's a red tag. That's directly cut from Major League. So they watched Major League and came up with the impetus for this or the mechanism they would use in this movie.
Are you ready to do a victory lap?
About what?
You're going to be really happy about this.
All right.
Did you know who wrote this movie?
Oh, boy. I don't know who wrote this movie.
David Mickey Evans. Now, you might know him if you are a fan of The Sandlot, because he wrote and directed The Sandlot.
Mm-hmm.
This was the movie that he also directed another movie at the same time. Mm-hmm. That this pretty much finished his career.
Now, are we going to do The Sandlot early in the podcast or late?
I think, we'll try to do different sports.
No, what I mean is...
Probably pretty early.
No. You don't get what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is... The way we're structuring these podcasts is we start with a good movie and we end with a bad movie.
It would be the good
movie. You think it'll be the beginning, not the end?
It would be the
beginning. You sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Positive. Yes.
All right. So.
But to your credit, though, I know you're an anti-Sandlot guy. This definitely taints the Sandlot a little bit for me because, like, he's the only writer credited. I know that he wasn't the only writer that worked on this, but this was his script.
So, I don't know this man, but if I did know him, this would taint anything he'd ever done in his life for me.
This is so horrible.
You need to explain a little bit about the 90s too, okay? The 90s, everything went as far as movies go, especially sports movies. Because with the success of late 80s, early 90s sports movies, starting from The Natural, going through Major League Bull Durham, Field of Dreams, all of these, and then you cross sports, Rudy coming in 93.
Movies like Little Big League Rookie.
And obviously going all the way back to Rocky. There was just a lot of sports movies being made, and nothing was thrown out the window. And we were in the golden age of talking animal movies, right? We had Babe. Sure. Babe came out in the fall of 95. So
Dunstan Checks Out.
Air Bud. All these. Dunstan Checks In, by the way.
Sorry.
Jesus Christ.
I never seen it. I was checked out.
Good Lord.
Sorry.
So it made sense.
Yeah.
They at least tried it. I have a question for you based on that knowledge.
Okay.
Do you think there's a world where you can make a movie about a baseball playing chimpanzee well?
No.
Just can't do it. It can't be made well.
You could make a movie where the mascot's the chimp and then the baseball player finds just kind of like a Turner and Hooch type situation.
Like it's an inspiration to him build a relationship and it turns the guy's season around?
Right. That's the only way you could even make it passable. The idea that the chimp, is playing third base and at one point in the movie he turns an unassisted triple play.
That's his first action. That's the first play. He gets sent into the game. Okay, third baseman gets hurt.
No, he just drops the fly ball.
No, he gets hit in the face by the fly ball.
Right. Well, yes.
Yeah, but he gets hurt.
All right.
So he's out. Right. And do you remember the name of the manager? Chubb or something?
Chubb.
So Chubb, the manager, played by Jack Warden, walks out to the umpire.
Not Chubby at all.
Walks out to the umpire. He's like, all right, well. And he brings that with him. Here's my guy. And the other coach is apoplectic. Like, no, we're not making a disgrace of this game. And the umpire is just like, gives this crazy speech. He turns to the crowd and he says, this is America, where any young man, woman, child, or ape can play this game.
Right.
And it's like the most preposterously patriotic speech here. And it kind of made sense at the time. It was like, okay, well, the umpire wants. So Ed goes into the game. There's a jam. The bases are loaded. First ball is a line drive hit above his head. He jumps up, does two backflips, lands, tags the guy out, coming back to third, and then runs down the guy. Unassisted triple play. Wow.
It was impressive to watch. Oh. I have an issue with this movie.
Well, do you?
Yeah, I have another one. That has nothing to do with
I have about nine more.
I have one that has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
This may be the worst mother in the history of cinema. She leaves her child alone. So this is love interest of Matt LeBlanc.
All right.
The single mom.
Matt LeBlanc's apartment. He lives in an apartment complex. And in the apartment complex is a woman. 30 years old, probably.
Yeah.
30 years old. She has about an 8-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
maybe nine, and they live together. And the first time we meet them, early in the movie, LeBlanc's coming home from practice, right? And she just throws herself at Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah.
She just throws herself. She's very thirsty. She's like, so when are we going out? So like, it's very, and the daughter is in on it.
Oh, yeah.
Daughter's like, why won't you fuck?
She invites him over for dinner.
Why won't you fuck my mom?
She's like, why don't you come over for dinner tonight? And he's like, well, I can't. I got to worry about baseball. And meanwhile, you know, Ed's just standing there. It's a very bizarre scene. And the daughter, daughter's all like, let's go.
And so they eventually, they have a date, right?
They do.
And the first time they go out on a date, they just.
Well, the daughter facilitates the date. The daughter's like, ask Matt LeBlanc, ask the character, are you gay?
That's right.
And Matt LeBlanc's like, no. Yeah. He's like, why don't you fuck my mom?
Yeah, why don't you fuck my mom? Why don't you take my mom out?
And LeBlanc's like, well, all right, maybe I will.
And so they go on a date, and who's the babysitter? They leave the kid with the monkey. They leave the kid with the monkey. And chaos ensues. They have the popcorn. They have the exploding microwave. Right. They have all the tropes. But
by the way, not the only time that this happens. Later on in the movie, unfortunately, Ed gets ill.
Yeah.
and the mom leaves the daughter alone with Ed in the hospital.
So Matt LeBlanc has to go to the championship game. Well, they never say anything but the championship game.
Right, championship game.
And LeBlanc's like, I got to go to the game. I'll give you a ride.
He needs a ride. Okay, let's put reality aside for a second and say, fine, he gets a ride.
Take the daughter with you.
Let's just say she doesn't. Whatever. Here's what gets even worse. The mom doesn't then immediately do a U-turn and go back to the hospital. She watches the game. She's in the stands.
That's right. She stays at the game. She stays at the game.
She never goes back for her kid. This is the worst mom in history. Imagine if your neighbor let a chimpanzee and an 8-year-old girl, like, you would call child services the second the mom left the house.
Oh, my goodness. And you know what was crazy about that date? They have an 8-year-old. The 8-year-old girl. They went to a carnival. They went to a carnival.
It would have been so much fun for a kid to
go. They were riding teacup rides and they were playing carnival games.
You know, the monkeys almost setting the house on fire.
All right.
It was wild.
Did there were some actors. Okay, if you've ever seen, I hate to bring up the Cosby Show and Martin, the guy who played Cockroach on the Cosby Show, the guy who played, I don't remember his name on Martin.
In this?
Yeah, he's a second baseman.
Oh, my God.
His name is Stats, and we never get a background, but apparently Stats just knows all kind of baseball because that's Cockroach from the Cosby. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I never even connected that. Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
There's another TV one that you figured out because we're texting each other while we're watching. I think we both were in just disbelief, and you mentioned you saw someone from Parks and Rec. PA announcer.
Oh, the PA announcer is Jim O'Hare, who plays Jerry Gergich.
Yeah, which I was like, how do I know this guy?
And it's young Jerry Gergich. He's got dark black hair. Yeah, it's Jerry Gergich doing the PA announcing.
Which is wild because the PA announcing the whole time is played throughout the entire scene.
This is how you know you're watching a bad sports movie. They always
play by play.
They always get this wrong. This happens a lot. It happened to Little Giants. It happened in Necessary Roughness, where the guy doing the announcing, which you're supposed to believe is TV announcing, is actually going out over the PA system. Which is crazy.
Imagine like trying to play and the guy's like, basically, telestrating exactly what you're doing.
Did you notice how cartoonishly bad the crowd was in this movie?
They, at times they were like a riotous mob.
They were
getting incredibly angry.
Yeah, it was.
Like when Matt LeBlanc, he has trouble throwing a curveball, keeps getting knocked out of the park. If he throws the curveball, the crowd wants to lynch him.
The crowd wants to murder him, yes.
But then when Ed is doing great things, Ed, the crowd loves him.
Now,
you're ecstatic.
Just to take an ice pick and just scrape away a little bit more about the believability of this movie.
Mm.
Ed turns the team season around by playing a good defensive third base and having a tiny strike zone and drawing walks all the time. That's what turns the season around. As soon as he gets in the lineup, he draws walks and he steals a base. And he plays lockdown defense at third base. I don't think that's changing your season.
It doesn't. In fact, there was a player named Eddie Yost who played in the 50s and 60s. Yeah. He was the third baseman who had a great batting eye. He walked all the time. He was okay at third baseman defensively. He always played for second division teams. His teams always finished fifth, sixth, seventh. This Ed is not enough to turn the season
around. Now, did you notice what I noticed? We only see one at bat from Ed.
Right.
And he takes a walk.
Right. Although that fourth, I had.
Those were strikes.
The last one is.
The last two pitches were strikes.
Strikes.
The last two pitches were absolutely
really
strikes. Because, first of all, his strikes aren't that small.
No.
He's got a big torso. huge torso.
Yeah.
He's got a strike zone.
Right.
And but he gets on first base and he just walks all the time. And it's one more question.
Okay.
The first time we see him play, he fields a ground ball cleanly and he throws it across the first and throws it so hard it burns a hole in the first baseman's mitt.
Correct.
If Chubb's a good manager, why we're not gonna try him on the mound?
I kept waiting for it.
We're not gonna try him on the mound, we're not gonna try him pitching.
You're having pitch.
I don't. It's just.
Anything else on Ed, or should we rate it?
We're gonna rate it in a minute. I have a. There's a couple more things. Could it have been Maywell? I asked that. Why didn't he pitch? Who's the box agent? Oh, one thing. The minor league field that they filmed this in.
Yeah.
Stunningly beautiful place.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Surrounded by mountains. I assume it's just somewhere in Southern California they got for cheap. But it's just like surrounded by some mountains and some trees. It's a beautiful place.
The last summer I went to Utah and I went to the Salt Lake City AAA. Yeah. And that is mountains. The vista is amazing. I got to say, other than that, this is the best vista I've ever seen.
One of the most beautiful fields I've ever seen. That literally my notes were, could it have been made well? Why didn't he pitch? Who's LeBlanc's agent? The field was beautiful. And the mom was kind of a whore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She was so, the thirstiest woman I've ever seen.
Easy on the eyes. She's pretty.
Not as easy. I feel like she wasn't quite as good looking as Matt LeBlanc was. Matt LeBlanc, good looking guy.
Matt LeBlanc, very good looking guy.
Especially 1995 Matt LeBlanc.
Oh, yeah.
Good looking guy.
Well, the only his hair is.
They colored his hair a little bit.
Differentiate from Ross. They made his hair a little blonde.
Well, he didn't play Ross. He played Joey.
Sorry, Joey, of course.
Now, I have two notes. Two notes. Number one is, and I'm going to do this for every bad movie we watch.
Okay.
What else could you have been watching in the theaters when you chose to go see Ed? This was March 15th, 1996.
I do want to say Ed was eighth in the box office that year. That weekend, excuse me, the weekend it opened.
So it debuted number eight.
Right. It only made $4 million total, did $2 million that weekend.
So Ed makes
instant bomb.
Ed debuts March 15th, 1996. Now, I will say this. 96, I don't think, is a great movie year, but it's one of my
– Very strong.
It's one of my favorite movie years because – my first serious girlfriend, I was 17 years old, and I as a senior, going to my senior year, started dating this girl. And when you date in high school, we dated for about 10 months, basically my whole senior year. And when you date in high school, you see a lot of movies. You see a lot of movies. We went to a movie every weekend. Right. That was where we were going. So I saw almost, in the back half of 96, I saw every movie that came out in theaters.
Right.
But early 96, I was going to movies a lot. I was hanging out with my boys. But in March 15, 1996, you could have seen these movies in the theaters. Could have seen Broken Arrow with John Travolta and
Christian Slater.
Decent.
Yeah, it's all right.
I saw it in the theaters.
I saw it like the HBO right after.
It's a decent, not great. Good concept, but not great. Executive Decision actually debuted this weekend. That was Kurt Russell as the president. Is that right?
It's right. Open number two. On the theater.
It opened number two because Birdcage was in its second week. The Birdcage with Nathan Lane was in its second week, and it remained number one.
Yep. $16 million.
Now, in its fifth week, you could have seen Happy Gilmore.
Right, which was number 10 that week.
Yeah, but you could have seen Happy Gilmore in the theater this weekend. You could have seen Down Periscope, which I saw in the theaters. Down
Kelsey
Periscope.
Grammer, right?
Kelsey Grammer as a naval lieutenant or whatever. Lauren Holly's in it from Dumb and Dumber. Not terrible, but not good. Certainly not good. And then you could have seen Homeward Bound, the incredible.
Homeward Bound 2.
Austin,
yes. San Francisco.
And I must say, I never saw that.
I've never seen it.
While Ed, bad movie, weren't a lot of great movies in the theater at that time.
Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, but this also in its fifth week. You've already seen it.
Yeah, you already seen it.
So March of 96.
Mr. Holland's Open. Mr. Holland's Open was in its 12th week.
So and still in theaters.
Yeah.
March isn't exactly, if your movie is released in March, I don't think the studio really thinks you're that big of a movie.
No.
March is not really a big movie time, but Ed comes out March 15th, 1996, and I didn't see
seasonally
it in theaters.
Tanked.
I didn't see it in theaters.
No one did. No one else did either.
What was my second question? Okay. If you, and we'll do this every show.
Okay.
We have to execute one trade from movie to movie. We have to trade one character straight up for another character.
Yep.
Or it would go two and two, but we have to – or maybe two for one. I don't know.
And ideally, it makes both movies better.
You make this movie better. Now, I have –
both movies better.
Both movies
I'm
better.
Trying to make both movies better.
Okay, so who can we take from Ed to make Moneyball better, and who can we take from Moneyball to make Ed better? Okay, I've got it.
Okay.
I would like to know yours.
I love my trade, but it makes
I love mine, and it makes both movies better immediately.
Okay. All right.
Okay. What is your trade?
My trade is Chris Pratt for Matt LeBlanc. It makes Ed substantially better. Well, makes Ed better. I think it might weaken Moneyball a little bit, but I think actually Matt LeBlanc actually would have been a decent.
I think Matt LeBlanc could have played that role of an aging, especially 2011, of an aging catcher who's trying to hang on and is.
I think he has to remain this age though for the trade to make sense.
He has to be young.
Yeah.
So young Matt LeBlanc plays Scott Hedberg.
Yeah.
I can see great,
but
that.
I think Pratt makes Ed so much better.
Okay.
Because LeBlanc's horrible in this.
All right. LeBlanc's horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible. So mine, if he weren't on Friends, like to the point, if he were not on Friends and you saw Ed, it was just a young actor trying to make it, he would have never worked again.
Well, he never top billed again. They never frontlined a movie again. This ended the career of the director, ended the career of the writer, it ended the career of Matt LeBlanc as barely being a movie star.
Yeah.
This movie tanked a lot.
And it ended the career of this monkey.
Right.
It might have ended chimpanzees in film.
We never saw Ed again.
It might have ended chimpanzees in film.
I can't think of another one.
Chimpanzees had a moment.
Burt Reynolds.
Not Burt. Yeah, Clint Eastwood. Yeah. Every Which Way But Loose.
Right.
Clyde. But he was an orangutan.
Oh.
He wasn't a chimpanzee.
I mean, same. Ronald Reagan did, was a bozo?
Well, I don't know. Well, Michael Jackson had Bubbles.
Yeah.
The chimp. All right. My trade from this movie?
Okay.
Straight up, one for one. I'm trading Chubb, the manager of the Santa Rosa Rockets.
Jack Warden.
I'm trading Jack Warden and Chubb. These characters, actor and all.
Oh, wow.
I'm trading Jack Warden and Chubb. And I'm trading them to Moneyball, and I'm taking back Art Howe and Philip Seymour Hoffman's portrayal. Because this movie desperately needs somebody in it to be a naysayer, to be a doubter, guys, I don't know. And you need a manager that if Art Howe, as written in Moneyball, shows up in Ed and he's just pissed off the whole time, and that makes Ed better.
It does.
Phillips,
I don't think it makes Moneyball better though.
I tell you what, if you've got Chubb there just to go along with everything and smoking cigars, okay, Billy, all right, we'll do it. Hey, man, I managed a monkey. I can manage these guys. Like, I think it makes it better.
I would love to see Art Howe manage Ed.
Yes.
He'd be so – imagine how pissed he'd be. He'd be so angry.
But I almost want to retcon a world where he disagrees with Billy and he gets fired. And he tries another team, and he gets fired. And eventually, 5 years later, he's just managing a monkey in the minor leagues.
It's like Moneyball 2, like the Art Howe story.
Moneyball 2, Ed.
Yeah, Art Howe.
Yeah.
I would watch, if Hoffman had lived, I would have easily watched like a 10-episode Netflix series on Art Howe.
But
I want more Howe.
If Philip Seymour Hoffman shows up in Ed and is just absolutely pissed off the whole time, just such a great counterbalance to the stupidity going on around him. Just if this guy's so miserable in a good world, put him in a bad world. Put him in the shitty world. That's what I want to see. My trade's good.
I like your trade. I think I like my trade better, but I like your trade.
No, you can't like your trade better.
Yeah, I think I do. I think Chris Pratt just makes the movie better. Oh, what are you rating Ed? 1 to 100. Now, it was never boring.
It was never boring.
It was horrible. It was an absolute atrocity.
15?
Wow. Going higher than me, I think. I'm going to go with an 8.
An 8? Yeah. Well, I mean, like,
I can't give it a 1. It
was, I do think there are going to be bad movies I enjoy less than that.
Like, Battlefield Earth is the worst we've ever seen. It's with John Travolta.
Yeah.
That movie's boring and bad. Where this was, I was kind of entertained the whole time.
But you were entertained how bad it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You were never entertained by something they wrote. You were never entertained by something they were trying to entertain you
with.
There
was one moment where actually it was pretty clever.
What?
I have to give her credit for something. Ed's watching TV, and he flips the channels. He's going through all his movies, and he lands on Friends.
He's watching Friends, yes.
And Jennifer Aniston's with Marcel the Monkey.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty That's pretty smart.
I was waiting for do they have the balls to show LeBlanc in this episode?
No, it was so meta. It was so weird. But no, they had Rachel with Marcel.
Yeah, yeah, Ed's watching Friends.
And I'm like, oh, that's funny. That's clever. That's smart.
Yeah.
That's the only moment.
Yeah. All right, just to put a bow on it.
Yep.
So Ed shows up. The owner buys him, right? Ed shows up, and they find out he can play third base. So he's playing third. The team starts winning. LeBlanc starts pitching better. We haven't even mentioned a name that needs to be mentioned. So they start playing well. The owner gets greedy and sells Ed.
Oh, we haven't. You're right.
He sells Ed. We haven't mentioned a name that I'm about to mention.
Oh, I know.
He sells Ed to another team before the championship game. And during the championship game, Tommy Lasorda is coming down from the big club, the big team. It doesn't even really imply that.
He did see Los Angeles at one point. That's
coming down to Los Angeles, coming down to see these minor leaguers play. And if you pitch well, you might go to L.A. And so LeBlanc, by the way, doesn't pitch that well. He gives up four runs.
He does not pitch. Complete game, I guess. But
complete game, right. Four runs.
Jack Moore is special.
And there's two bad guys in the movie. It's the owner, the greedy owner, whose character is so cartoonish it's not even worth mentioning. But then there's the relief pitcher who always comes in when LeBlanc blows it.
He's also the owner's assistant.
Yeah.
The only reason he's interesting to me, he played, do you remember Ferris Bueller, the TV show?
Yeah.
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
The owner's assistant, that was Ferris Bueller, Charlie okay. Schlatterly.
Really? That was the guy who's like, Matthew Broderick playing me? Never. Yeah, okay.
Right.
So yeah, but then the second bad guy is the relief pitcher who always comes in when LeBlanc blows it. And he LeBlanc is pitching the championship game. Ed's in the hospital after LeBlanc rescued him from the people who didn't do anything wrong. They bought him.
Well, they were beating him up.
The
guys were assholes.
But LeBlanc saves him.
Yes.
Ed ends up going to the hospital after getting locked in a banana truck.
Frozen
banana truck. So
Ed almost freezes to death.
LeBlanc is pitching the game. Ed makes a heroic. The daughter puts his glove. Ed's hooked up to one of these monitors where it's beep, beep.
He's in bad shape.
She puts his glove on his chest. Immediately, the heart monitor, beep, 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 beep. Immediately, higher heart rate.
Fine.
He wakes up. A doctor comes in. He's going to put him to sleep. The doctor ends up missing, putting himself to sleep. The daughter breaks out. Does Ed drive the ambulance?
Oh, yes.
Ed drives the ambulance.
They never show any clip of it, but Ed jumps in the driver's seat.
Yeah. Where's mom? The fucking 8-year-old's riding around with a monkey driving
a stolen ambulance.
Drives the ambulance. And I thought when Ed gets there, all right, they're going to put him in and LeBlanc's going to get inspired.
No.
Ed gets there and just goes and sits in the crowd.
Well, yeah. he might not have been the team's property. I mean, if we're going to be,
Oh, okay, yeah.
Might have not have been necessarily, quote-unquote, on the team.
Wasn't on the roster anymore.
Right,
yeah.
He'd been traded.
So he sits in the crowd, and LeBlanc, who can throw 125 miles an hour, gets the last guy out by throwing a curveball. I don't know who.
After giving it four runs.
I don't know who called that pitch. And as soon as it ends, he gets the final out. Lasorda says, I want him in L.A. tomorrow.
And I'll pay him whatever he wants.
What? And the movie ends with LeBlanc, the whore mother, the kid,
abandoned daughter,
in the front seat of the truck, and Ed is affixed to. He has a swing in the back of the. They're hauling a trailer with a swing for Ed, right. And everybody goes to L.A. and happily ever after. I give it a 15.
I give it an 8.
I do think there will be movies I enjoy less than.
Two. It'd be worse made, though. I have to factor that in a little bit.
Yeah, it was preposterously badly made.
I mean, there is on some level I did sort of enjoy this. But I mean, I can't. I mean,
it was poorly made to the point where I think if I gave you $10,000 and 5 cameras, I think you could probably make a better movie.
It was just wild how they were inept about everything. Like, they had the timing go sort of on set. Why would you have all the baseball stuff be wrong? And David Mickey Evans wrote.
You say Tommy Lasorda was on set. He was probably on set for 20 minutes.
I know, but he saw a script of Lasorda, who knows. I just can't believe they got everything wrong.
Was Lasorda still managing the Dodgers in 96? He wasn't, right?
Did he get fired in 96?
I think it's around there.
I think he was still managing when this movie was made.
Okay.
Probably got fired. Well, actually, about a few months after this came out. This even ruined.
It ruined Tom Lasorda's career.
It ended Lasorda.
It ruined everybody.
Everyone, no one came out of this safe.
I would say LeBlanc did okay for himself. Just he had the safety net. He had the umbrella. He had the parachute of friends. I mean, he obviously had that over him.
But he went on. He did a CBS show afterwards. He did okay. He did another reality show.
I would say if you got Matt LeBlanc's career, you'd be okay. Be satisfied.
Residuals from Friends alone. But I'm saying he obviously did this. He wanted to be a movie star. You don't top line a movie unless you're a movie star. He never was able to do that again because of this movie.
So which one was better, Moneyball or Ed?
It's tough. I'm going to slight nod to Moneyball.
Do you like this concept, this double play concept?
I do. How about you?
I do. I enjoy talking about the bad movie a little bit more.
Me too, but I like right. I like talking about the good movie too.
So next week we'll do.
The audience is going to like us talking about the bad movie more.
We'll do Hoosiers.
Yes.
And Eddie.
Right.
So if you want to watch along, watch Eddie and Hoosiers. I assume you've already seen Hoosiers, but watch Eddie. You've never seen Eddie.
I've never seen Eddie.
I've seen Eddie.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I watched it back in the 90s. It's bad.
I'm excited.
It's not a fiasco of a poorly made mess like this is. It's an actual movie that looks like a movie. This looks like a teenage art project. But it's an actual like they. She actually coaches the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. Like it's not a right. It's not a low rent production.
Right.
It's a movie, and it's bad.
So about the format too. I think if we just did the bad movies, which I'm sure the audience is enjoying more, I think that would get the conversation would become tedious at some point.
Well, it'd be repetitive, and
I think having the good movie to front load it makes it more more balanced, but also like more enjoyable discussion.
I also want to know when we get the exact pairing right, because Moneyball and Ed's an incredible pairing, just thinking about these two juxtaposed against each other. But somebody's going to give us a pairing that just fits.
Well, I love Hoosiers and Eddie because it's about coaches. It's like symmetry, not just basketball, it's about coaches.
Yeah.
So like if people could have symmetry like that, that's kind of what I'm looking for.
We're going to get to it next week. Do you love Hoosiers?
Oh, we'll talk about next week. I'm not going to say
that. Do you love Hoosiers?
I'm not saying anything.
You don't have to tell me how much you love it. Do you like do you like Hoosiers?
Why do we want to say that now? Isn't it more fun to be surprised?
Why?
Because it's fun. Surprise is fun. Surprise is good.
All right. Next week.
Next week.
Hoosiers?
And Eddie.
All right. Do you have a big sign-off?
I do. This has been Chris Klemmer and Brandon Walker signing off.
That was it?
That's it.
Stella Blue Coffee's new canned lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Jesus Christ.
The all-new Whoop is here, now more advanced than ever. Train smarter, sleep deeper, recover faster. Extend your healthy years. Understand your cycle phases. Now 7% smaller with 14 plus days of battery life. So your data never stops, and neither do you. Power your best performance with memberships made for every goal. Join Whoop today.